Okay, can I have your attention, we're going to begin. I think we waited about 5 minutes, and if she comes, she can join in, but we have a quorum, so we can continue here. So the recorder is working?
Yes.
Okay, this is Monday, June 9th, 2014. Time is approximately 2:13 p.m., and this is the meeting of the Main Gate District Design Review Committee. We're at the fourth floor room in the Joel Valdez Main Library. The first item is a roll call, and I'm Jim Mazzocco, and I'll do the roll call, and we can begin. Jan Cervelli, absent. Jim Chaffee?
Here.
Present. Rick Gonzalez?
Here.
Design professional? Here. Jay McCollum? Absent. Bob Smith?
Here.
Here. Tom Warren?
Here.
And substituting for Matt Williams, Noah Sensabaugh?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. Rick Gonzalez is the design professional, and normally how we run these is we have the design professional as the chair unless anybody objects to that setup. And I assume we're okay with that. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Rick, and you can call out the items in the agenda and proceed from there.
Item two, approval of legal action report. I assume everybody has the report and has read it. Yeah, I'll move to approve it.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
None. I'm going to abstain.
Point of abstention. Did you get that, or do we need a roll call?
I think we have that for the record, that everybody approved, and the abstention was Noah Sensabaugh.
Item three, the hub at Tucson One signage presentation. Please proceed.
Okay. Good afternoon, Carrie Sylvan, representing Core Campus. I also want to let everybody know that Heather and Andy are both here from the City of Tucson Sign Department, in large part so that when I screw up in explaining something, they can jump in and explain what I've messed up and how to fix it. We presented this information to you all at a study session back in March, which at least for me feels like it was ages ago. So I'm going to go through a little bit of the background too, because I know that Mr. Sensabaugh is here as well, kind of picking up from Matt as we move forward. So I want to kind of explain. First of all, this is the Core Campus team. Most of these names will be familiar to you. Tom and Eric from Core Campus are here. Jeff Zaliska from Antunovich is also here today. Lisa is also working on the project, and then Rory is here from my office as well. The first thing I want to do is explain why we're even sitting here in front of you related to signage, because if you read the Main Gate Overlay District, there's not a lot of information there, criteria there for you related to signage. So back when the Main Gate Overlay District was put into place, everybody did a lot of work on making sure that everything melded with other areas of the Land Use Code, now the UDC. What was sort of left out was anyone checking boxes related to the sign code, which most of you, I know Tom and Rick have a lot of familiarity with the City of Tucson sign code, I'm sure with Luna's involvement, there's probably been some familiarity as well, but the sign code is its own code and has its own regulations, and it's loosely tied to uses within the Unified Development Code, the Land Use Code. So when you take a look, and what I've done, because Heather and Glenn and I agreed this might be the easiest way to present it, and if it sucks, you can blame me. These are the four, the three and the potential, and the fourth, the hub two that we'll be talking about in just a minute, buildings and their location and their underlying zoning you can see on the map. What I've put on top of those are potential, the sign code regulatory environment. So that there are really three sign code regulations. There's the non-residential, residential, and then there's special districts, of which there's a number of them, including the historic district, pedestrian district. So when you take a look at these four buildings, if anybody comes in with a land use that is non-residential, like multi, and it's multi-family, it falls under the multi-family district. And per the sign code, you have a maximum of 50 square feet for the entire building. There's nothing in the sign code that that talks about size of the building, nothing related to high-rise buildings, anything like that. It's just if it's a full, the building, no matter the size, is used as multifamily, then it's 50 square feet. The pedestrian district permits three square feet of signage for every one linear foot of street frontage. And so that's your maximum in the pedestrian district. So I'm looking at these buildings, that building that has the PED on it is Campus Acquisition's next building. So that actually has about, it's around just under 600, I think, square feet of signage that's permitted. What happened in Hub Phase 1, which is the X, is our underlying zoning is R3. We're utilizing the main gate overlay district, so our zoning is ultimately going to be U for the urban overlay, and we are mixed use. When you look at the sign code, there is no place for us. There's no regulatory environment, okay? We're not all multifamily. We're not really in the general business district because we're not in a zone that would permit these uses. So it became a no man's land until May 6th. When our mayor and council adopted a revision to the sign code that says if you're in the situation like this, where you're ultimately your general business district and you have the U, if you're going to propose any more than 50 square feet of signage, either one sign that's over 50 square feet or a total signage that's over, a total package that's over 50 square feet, we want you to go talk to the Development Review Committee and talk about your signage and get a sense of consistency and context, because you're in front of the DRC or whatever process is appropriate in the Main Gate Overlay District to deal with signage. That last statement that I added is important. The reason that we're here is because we are in Area 1 of the Main Gate Overlay District, so we come to the DRC for approval. For buildings that would otherwise just have the design professional do an approval, that's where the signage would go if they're in a similar situation. So now that this is all clear as mud, did that make any sense at all? Okay. So the next thing that we did, staff and Jim, we went into the actual Main Gate Overlay District to take a look at where signage is actually mentioned, since that's what I'm presenting to you. It's mentioned in two places. One of them is irrelevant to our request. The only one that's really relevant, and I'll tell you what both of them are, is in the design guidelines C19J suggests that accent colors should be used consistently throughout the building in, and then lists a whole bunch of architectural features, lighting, window frames, and signage is one of the things that accent colors can be used in. The second place that it's mentioned is C19AB, which indicates that canopies can be used as a design element and may incorporate signage. What you'll see today is we're not proposing signage on the canopies, so that's why I said it was irrelevant. So in lots of discussions with staff about kind of this proposal, what I kept asking is, what are you all reviewing, right? And what are you reviewing for? And the conclusion that we came to in looking at all this, including what Mayor and Council did, was that you're looking at the sign package for the amount of signage, obviously, because we're asking for the over 50 square feet, and then consistency both within the building, where we're locating it, making sure that it makes sense based on the architecture that you've approved. And then, does it make sense within the surrounding area, the size and the amounts for what we're trying to communicate with our signage in the building? So what I'd like to do now is set a little bit of context for you, some of which I already did and I won't repeat myself. So in a normal business district, as I said, and the pedestrian district, it's three square feet of signage for every one linear foot. So the next building, it's about 600 square feet. Our building, the Hub 1 building, we have linear footage both on First and on Tyndall. So when you go through that math, based on that linear feet and multiply it by 2, if we were regulated by general business and pedestrian district without any of the other complications, it ends up being a little over 1,000 square feet of signage. It's 1,095 square feet.
Carrie, I just want to interrupt you slightly. Just to correct you, it was 3 square feet. You just happened to learn in 2, but you're correct on the total amount of sign area based upon the 2 separate frames.
Okay, it's 3.
Yes.
I know that.
Just want to make sure that everybody understood that.
Thank you. So just to get that was just to give you a perspective of kind of amounts of signage for buildings that are usually doing what we're doing, which is a combination of multifamily and some retail uses. The other question that came up when we did this through the study session were questions about what does the signage in the area kind of look like. And I think that we can honestly say that the signage is I don't want to say consistently inconsistent, but it's a real hodgepodge of signage, and it's in large part because this is one of those areas in the main gate where you have a lot of historic, and so that historic regulation comes into place. And as Tom is, I think, abundantly aware of, most of them have variances. A lot of them do from even that historic. So each signage package was kind of, for each of the developments, was really done on its own accord. But we went ahead and took some pictures to show you, and they're keyed to that map that was the slide I just was at, but you have it, so I don't have to keep flipping back and forth. The other question that came up in the last meeting was the size of the Marriott signage. So the size on the Marriott sign that is to the north, which I believe is the one in 1A, is 179 square feet, and that building is 108 feet tall. So that gives you a sense of perspective, just as you hear what our proposal is. So these are some of the signs. I know the sushi restaurant isn't in there. Just now a joke, I understand. Thank you, Jim. So what are we proposing? There is a one-page sheet in front of you that is a clear explanation. Well, I think it's clear, and Heather thinks it's clear as the person who's going to be administering it. We think it's clear, proposal for what we're trying to do with phase one, and I'm gonna walk you through it. So the first thing that we are asking for is that the sign regulations have a cap on them for this building, and that is 600 square feet. As I said before, if we were in any of the regular districts, it would be over 1,000 square feet. If you were to add up, and I think we did this at the last hearing, all of the signage that we're proposing, it comes out to be a little bit over 400 square feet of signage. So we worked with staff on the 600 foot cap because there is the potential for some of our retail tenants to do window signs and some other things that we want them to be able to do. Within the sign code, and that's the way this is written, but it gives a little bit of wiggle room on that overall cap for the building. There are 2 signs that we're asking for that are related to really marketing, signing, identifying the hub, which is really the residential portion. So the first one, and again, if you're, I'm following, it's the PowerPoint, but I'm also following the handwritten explanation. So the signage for the residential multifamily use, we're proposing an under canopy sign near the location of the entrance of the lobby at the residential living. We call it the button. Or at least I think we call it the button. That's what I've heard it used. And so now I'm calling it the button. It hangs below the canopy. Right, Jeff?
Yes.
Okay. And it's about 13.5 square feet in size. So it's pedestrian oriented, pedestrian related, and this is down on the first floor area. You have in your packet some of the details of the signage if you're so interested in, and if you have questions about it, we're gonna ask Jeff. The second sign that's for the residential multifamily is the wall sign that we're requesting on the north facing wall, so it faces Speedway. This is up towards the top of the building, and we specifically put in here a not to exceed 180 square feet. So while we're asking for the cap for the overall building, we're acknowledging that what we want for this sign is 180 square feet. We're not going to use the whole cap on this. In working with staff, they will be flush-mounted letters with no raceways, and they will be backlit or the halo lit. And I have, which you probably flipped in your packets, here's the detail on the, and then this is the, we were also asked, I think, from you all for a night view on what this would look like with the halo behind it. Here's our day view, though. I thought we had a day view on it, too. Oh, well.
Is the U not backlit?
The U is black.
Okay.
So it is backlit, but it's black.
It will just read darker. It'll be illuminated, but it will read darker.
And you'll see, obviously, I'm telling you something you can figure out. The color scheme is pretty obvious. And what we're doing is kind of an accent color for the signage, but blends with some of the other colors and hues that are in the building. On the retail, restaurant, and other uses along the first floor, what we're asking for is that each tenant be permitted one wall sign. It's mainly above the door. There were some questions about the corner tenant and if they end up having, if that gets used by one tenant and they have frontage on both First and Tyndall. We're asking that they be able to put signage on both of the frontages. It's not any more signage than would otherwise be there. We just don't know yet whether that's a single tenant or two tenants. We're also asking that they each, and you can see the little red marks that kind of come down. You can see them better on here. On either side of those wall signs, which we're calling under canopy signs, they're banners. And they can be either perpendicular or horizontal to the building. We worked with staff on what those, how to articulate this so that we don't run into any issues with the existing sign code. We'd like to allow the window door signs, as I said before. The backstop to any tenant over proliferating their windows with signage is that the entire sign package per tenant can be no more than 30% of their elevation, which is actually from the existing sign code and helps to distribute the signage throughout the building so that it doesn't become too much. And that's for their whole sign package. So if they do a wall sign, they do two banner signs, they're using a certain amount of up to that 30%. So they don't get to use the full 30% on windows unless they forego the rest of their signage, which I don't think I've ever seen anybody do. Neither have Heather, based on the head shaking that's going on. So all signage, we added these at the bottom after meeting with staff. The all signage shall comply with the following. Other than the signage that's up at the top on the north elevation, that hub sign, all signage shall be at the first floor level. We're really trying to mimic the pedestrian district and make sure that that's the purpose of the signage. The purpose of the sign up on the north side is really to just give identity to the building in a we think, a respectful and modest way. The under canopy signs can be the framed banner format and mounted, as I said before. And then all of the sign lighting has to be either internal or that halo effect, and that would be required of all the signage. So this is just a closer up detail as to what I was talking about, and I'm done. What we're requesting, in case you haven't figured this out, is approval of essentially this document and then these these pictures helped to articulate what it was we were proposing. So, you know, as you make whatever decisions, hopefully an approval, if you can speak to this, but if it needs, as the decision comes out, if any of these drawings need to be attached to it, they're in the record, we're comfortable with that. So we're respectfully requesting approval of the sign package that I just inartfully presented to you.
Can I just ask a clarification question? So Carrie, as I understand, your presentation contains the documents that will be approved by the design review committee, and you will be able to adhere to these documents in the future.
Yes.
So, a couple thoughts.
Could you keep it down?
I think that you know, as we discussed before, there's kind of, I see two categories of lighting here. One is the up high, speak to the world kind of thing that is larger and can be seen from a long distance, and the other is down low, pedestrian oriented, which really directs and activates, I think, the pedestrian level of retail and other things that we've asked to have and we're pleased to have on ground level. Am I correct in understanding that the only high sign that you have, just one, and that's on the north side? You're not putting any on any other elevations. Is that what we're hearing?
That is correct, and that's actually written into the document with that first bullet under all signage.
It's also my take that I know that the drawings and perspective can be manipulated, but it's my take that the color scheme used is somewhat muted and recedes a bit, as opposed to if you had bright yellow, red, or other kinds of colors. This seems to me to be something that is a little bit recedes. And I think that I like that there's plenty of lighting at the pedestrian level, and it appears that it's being handled in a manner that wouldn't get into the neighborhoods or cause problems beyond the street that it's on. So those are just a couple of thoughts. Could I ask the city folks here, is this something that seems to make sense to you guys? Mm-hmm.
It's the sign code. Yeah, it's underneath the general business district for the review. Okay. So it does, it's actually less than what they can have.
Okay, so you didn't have any comments or negative observations regarding this?
Yeah, there's no objection to anything they're proposing, common ball signs and under canopy signs.
Well, to me, I don't see anything objectionable, but I'm open to other thoughts.
To follow that up, I was just going to say that is that staff's recommendation? Does it follow this outline here?
By the way, I'm head of trolley work over at Planning and Development Services in the science section. Just to identify myself for the record. I reviewed the package in general, what they were proposing, and I didn't see anything that was a concern for not meeting the sign code criteria.
Okay, thank you.
So we have no objection to what they're proposing.
Thank you.
This question, if I can direct it to Heather and Andy, can they have a normal, or I shouldn't say normal, but very common, especially in Tucson, plexiglass fascia box with letters, and then it's just lit within the box? Would that be permissible?
They can have, that's known as the cabinet with the push-through letters, like what you have at CVS, similar to that, right, down the street?
Right, Well, that's with push-through letters, but can they just have it flush, Heather?
They can if they choose to have it flush.
So they can't have, like, what we did at the main gate is push through or cut out?
They can have it flush, they can have it...
They can have it flush.
Yeah, they can have it flush, they can have it push through letters on top of the actual sign structure. They can choose either way.
That, the flush, we don't allow it, you know, just for information's sake for this committee, we do not allow it in the main gate. Retail district. The letters have to be pushed through or cut out. But
the rationale?
The rationale is just it's a more attractive sign. That, you know, it's non-strip center oriented. That was the rationale that was developed a long time ago with the West University neighborhood.
What we propose is more restrictive, Tom, that we're requesting individual letters that are either
pushed through or cut out.
Front lit neon. So we're actually requesting, or it's just to get a higher quality of sign.
Where is that? I was looking for it. That's exactly what I was looking for.
You mentioned it in the inventory that they're included.
Yeah, that's in the,
Thanks, that's exactly what I was looking for, yeah.
Typically, the LEDs are an issue with the night sky compliance. I'm assuming you've gone through that process, that they are compliant in this case.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually written into the proposal as well. The very last statement in the first paragraph in the document says that we will comply with the outdoor lighting code.
Right.
So we have to, regardless of whether we write it in here, but we knew that was an issue.
Because of the LEDs, I bring that up, because typically they're not approved.
The LED is a front lit plexiglass face that typically they, up until a year or so ago, they were always BN. And now LEDists kind of started to replace BN. It's more efficient, it has a longer lifespan and things like that. So it's really acts exactly as the BN sites that are prevalent along university. It's really the same sort of a front lit face like that.
Where is it written? Jeff was saying where it's restricted to. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Well, so that's where I want, I need some clarification then too, because we put the flush mounted up related to this sign, the sign that's up on the screen right now, the hub sign. For the tenant signs, that's what you're talking about, right? The retail restaurant. I don't think that language
is in there.
Is in here. Is it, Heather, and I'm missing it?
What we're proposing is really a higher quality sign.
So you wouldn't mind if we were to add that requirement as he just stated it?
I would be amicable to that, but that's how we were.
That's what your intent was, Jeff.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I just clarify, if you add that condition, if you accept that condition, and that condition gets approved, if you want to do something different than that condition, then you're going to have to come back here.
Right.
Everybody understands that.
Well, that's
what he intends.
Yeah, but that's a higher quality sign, which
like you said, that's his intention.
Entice the building. I mean, it makes the building look better.
We're just stating something here.
It doesn't degrade the face of the building, right?
Pardon, I have a question to ask. Did you intend for that to be solely for the wall signage? Because they're also proposing on your canopy signage that it appears would be a flush surface with no raised lettering. So is that
or something? Or you could do raised lettering. I was thinking of
they
the
could do
fascia.
Or
I was thinking of the fascia
you're
signage
of the,
that
the
you
wall
saw.
Wall signage
right.
Along there, correct?
Right, and that would be up to the Jeff and the owners.
And to further clarify, if those raised letters that you're speaking about on the wall signage that you're
through.
Seeing in Mingate and or push through, they usually some of them are always installed on a backer rather than just having the individual pan channel letters themselves.
Yeah.
Are you open to having a backer on the backer?
In this case, definitely the way the building lays out.
Okay. You know,
some people won't want to do it individual letters, but that's up to the. And you guys will have the right to. You're going to approve. You're not going to.
Sure.
You're going to approve what comes through, right?
We have all approval.
Yeah, we approve every single sign of them before we go to Andy and Heather. We approve every one. Yeah.
Okay. So Heather, is there particular language that can help to articulate this that
sure.
we can?
Well, signage shall consist of at minimum push through and/or raised lettering. So, and that'll be understood to staff when we're reviewing this, that they can be on a backer board or that they can be pan-channel letters.
Yeah.
Because they might need to be on a raceway, depending on how the design of the building is.
Right,
the electrical
and where they're located on the fascia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the higher side is individual letters. The one thing that I just went through this with the retail tenant is that they have a certain brand look that had kind of the push-through letters where we generally in that project insisted on individual letters, so we probably want to allow the push through like that because if
either
we
or.
Say this is what we do on every one of our signs. We don't want to do it different. And if we're satisfied that it looks okay,
you have the option.
We allow for that.
Right,
yeah,
have
so
the option of individual
look.
Or.
Yeah.
That would work for me.
Okay, can we go back to the ban, what we call the banner signs? I think that's
perpendicular or parallel. Mounted off the building.
Absolutely.
Well, that could be
either or. Flat or push, you know, or cut out.
Which are you talking about that time?
The banner.
I'm talking about the banner signs.
Well, the banners aren't illuminated.
I know, but can they just be, and I'm only asking, can they just be something flat and painted? painted and...
That's what Heather was asking, right, yeah, they could be in this case, this is just the other sign.
Right, those are perpendicular solid frame.
Pedestrian oriented, right in front of you as you walk into the sidewalk.
So Heather, the wording would actually be all wall signage?
All wall signage.
Shall be pushed through and or raised?
Pushed at minimum, pushed through and or raised lettering.
Okay, and that allows the individual...
That can be pan channel letters on a raceway, that can be a backer board that has raised lettering on it. But that would be helpful to someone who might have like a specific logo, PCS or...
Or higher level would be the individual letters that are the reverse halo, that's another step.
And that needs to be in there that they can have it, so that you don't get too technical here, like Jim said, and then you gotta come back for it, and it's a nicer sign.
I do have one question then, because you brought up a good point, you and I have met before and worked on this with CBS.
Right.
Some people do have logos that are in a cabinet type shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that you've seen these before and have no issues with that, such as if he has a tenant, for example, Sprint PCS.
Yeah, there's a good one, yeah.
They have that yellow bar type thing, I'm assuming that would be...
That'd be fine, sure.
So I think it should be written in here somewhere that logos are permitted, because they might take place of a cabinet install, which is different than raised lettering.
Right.
So I think that should be an important distinction.
You might have the logo and then the letters, so you have both, but the logo might not be what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right, that's a very good point.
So language that says logos are permitted.
Logos are permitted in cabinet form.
Right.
Jim or Noah, any comments?
That goes along with what Jim always does.
Do I have a motion?
Good one.
I move we approve. Second.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimously approved. With the conditions that were set forth in the one sheet proposal for Hub One Phase One, and the added conditions of all signs shall be pushed through or raised letter, and logos and cabinets are permitted.
And also you want to put in maybe also cut out letters in case someone comes with that.
And cut out letters as well.
Yeah, and we're also going to be...
And that first condition is all wall signage.
All wall signage.
Yeah, we're going to consider that under canopy signage should be a separate name.
Okay.
Next item, the Hub at Tucson 2, Phase 2 architecture presentation by Jeff.
Carrie's
going
to start.
Yeah, hold on, I got to get that.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was good to have them here, by the way, to augment our technical and expertise.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I sit over here? It's probably the best spot to
join the club.
Join the club.
Is it anywhere you
I was jealous of all of you on the table.
Okay. I'm going to start this one, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jeff. We took the team. I was going to make a joke. I was going to reintroduce the team, because you all don't know who they are already. This is the Hub 2 architecture. You all remember we presented this a little bit at the study session back in March, and I have a couple of catch-up slides as well to kind of help. Hub 2 is just to give you a sense of where it is if you don't know already. Hub 1 is at the corner of First and Tyndall. Hub 2 is going to be directly next door to the north. What we did was showed you I'm going to run through a set of slides from the March 6th meeting, and then we heard some comments back from all of you, and I'm going to remind you what those were. And then the rest of the presentation is going to be Jeff kind of going through the proposal and explaining how we responded to some of the questions and concerns that we heard. Just to give you a little bit of more background, and I mentioned this at the last meeting, When you all approved phase one, you asked us to work with Ms. Gray, who's the only owner occupied adjacent to these projects, and we have been in pretty constant contact with her, and Chris Gans has been assisting with this in offering her some mitigation, is again the only owner occupied, and working with her to fulfill, to fulfill the request that you all made on phase one. We've also taken this phase two project through a preliminary pre-app with staff to just vet any major issues so that we didn't come before you with a proposal and request for approval on architecture for our phase two and find out we have a major code compliance issue. So we have done that. We should be okay on all of the issues. And we all know from the first thing you all did at the last meeting, which is update the process, that if we have anything that is considered to be a change, it will come through staff and it will come to you all as well to determine whether it affects, if it affects the architecture, if it's substantial or not. So this is the proposal that we showed you the first time. So I'm just going to run through a few slides. This is on our kind of looking at the northeastern edge of our building. This is on the southeastern edge. This is what you're seeing in the foreground is really the hub one. I'm just going to run through these. If you want to go back to them, you can. This is the west side. So here's the feedback we got initially from all of you, which was overall the architecture, it was a positive reaction. It's a building that has its own identity, but still tries to pick up from the surrounding areas. You asked us to talk to you a little bit about consistency with the surroundings, like we did with our phase one and showing where the architectural elements are. You wanted to ensure that the streetscape was going to be consistent, and we've been working closely with staff in the and campus acquisitions to create that consistent streetscape, and that will continue through phase two. You asked us to show elevations for the northeast and west facades, straight on elevations rather than just the renderings, which you will see in your packets, and we'll go through those. You asked for more detail, architectural detail on the lower facades on the west and the north as kind of an initial reaction to the pictures I just went through. Wanted to make sure we came in with an actual materials board, which is up here, so you can touch and feel and see the materials that we're proposing. We were asked to make sure that we address the environmental and conscious design standards that are, and we are meeting those. We have to meet at least five of them. We are meeting at least five, if not more. And that we were asked to talk a little bit about we answered a lot of the parking questions and our ratios and all that, but we'll go through that again. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, and I'm going to be Jeff's Vanna White.
So if I go like that, Vanna, that needs to change the slide.
You do not tell my husband that ever works.
Pretty sure he knows it doesn't.
Yeah.
So, as we began developing this design prior to sharing with you previously, we spent a lot of time in the West University neighborhood. And we wanted a modern building, but we wanted a building that felt comfortable in its surroundings and it made sense. And the colors, the massings, I think we talked about this before, we really tried to create a lot of massing variations, not just on the rear of the building, but also along the street. So where you see these buildings, these wonderful little homes in the West University neighborhood that have these three-dimensional characters, we really tried to carry on some of that with some of these elements that we provided in this building. The colors, obviously we try to be very sensitive about that. The colors here draw, there's tan tones, grays, shades of grays, and we see a lot of that in the neighborhoods, lighter colors like this. You know, colors very similar to what we're proposing. And we see a lot of variation of that color. We carry, because our building's bigger, we're able to carry those different colors in one building instead of going from one neighbor to the next that have variation in color. So we're doing that sort of within our own building. The university neighborhood or university street, we also had elements in this building because it's a larger building that carries some of the canopies and the covered elements, so we were looking at that as something that we could draw from also. And as we went through the neighborhood, you know, the one thing we found was that, it was interesting, here's some more from university, you can go to the next one. There was so much variation within the neighborhood in color, texture, and we were trying to take advantage of that, of the fact that there is really a kind of a neat eclectic mix of styles within that neighborhood. Spanish style, there's bungalows, there's arts and crafts. Go ahead to the next. You know, some of this, I know this is a fraternity, but it has, you know, interesting massing. And there's a lot of buildings that had that sort of thing. There's also buildings that have kind of a very strong rectilinear massing, and we also tried to take advantage of some of those things. So we felt that though there was a different scale, we were able to bring some of those things into the design that we had developed. Just wanted to touch a little bit on the scale of this building, a little bit less than some of the surrounding buildings. The campus acquisitions buildings are 159 feet, 148 feet. Our Hub 1 is 130, the Marriott is 108. So this building is 84, as the zoning requires, a good deal lower. And I think this is a good illustration. It really shows how different the scale is and how it steps down as it moves towards Speedway. So we think that that's kind of an interesting
size. This building's what, again?
84. 84.
Yes. That's right.
Six stories and 84.
So I can't see that very well. Would you just go around the horn again? The one, the
sure.
Hub 1 was what?
130.
130.
Okay. We're 84. The two campus acquisitions. The one on Tyndall is 159. The one on Park is 148. And then the Marriott, for reference, is 108 feet.
Thanks. They're laid out in here.
Okay. And then we had photographs from around the neighborhood, and we moved around from Speedway around to First Street and around Socuri. So this is from University in Tyndall across the street. Gives a good reference point against the existing buildings. These are fresh off the presses photographs. And then back at Euclid and Speedway again. The one thing you do get from this is that you are certainly closer towards Speedway. The site's about 190 feet across, so the proportion of it, it's interesting. We were surprised that it didn't feel smaller than it does, but it's really just the perspective of it being that much closer.
Yeah, it looks
better. Right.
The west, just out of curiosity, the north face of this building, and this is not digressing, I'm sorry, just for my own knowledge. The north face of this building, Jeff, to the face of curb on Speedway, is the same as phase one of campus acquisitions, or it's different?
It's a little different, I think, but not by a lot, by like maybe 30 to 40 foot range, closer to Speedway.
Right, yeah. Okay. That's actually good because it's smaller in scale, so it
right.
gives a better scale. Yeah.
And then we get the here. And then, you know, further back, it's interesting because as you get back to First Avenue, the building really starts to disappear
yeah.
behind lower buildings.
Right.
So I think that scale, I mean, really that's the success right. of the zoning that required that to step down.
That's good.
And then as we get into the neighborhood, you can't see it at all. This is from first and first, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you can't see it at all from second and first. And then as we're at University Boulevard, we're not even, you know, it's not even anywhere close. So, I'm kind of walking through, kind of weaving through the list that Carrie had in hand. So we can go ahead and carry to the next. With the streetscape, I want to make it perfectly clear, we have exactly the same pavers, exactly the same plant materials, exactly the same streetscape elements like benches and whatnot as we have at Hub 1. So we'll have almost 200 contiguous lineal feet along Tyndall of exactly that same streetscape with the permeable pavers, the two colors. We have the darker paver as a border trim material than the lighter paver, which is a permeable paver that runs up and down the sidewalk. That exact paver is across the street at Campus Acquisitions. They have that one. They don't have this one, but they do have some darker elements. I think mm-hmm. there is still continuity on that. We have red push pastiche, which is the same tree as we're going to have at Hub 1, and same tree as is across the street at the Campus Acquisitions property. The planters are detailed exactly the same way with exactly the same plant material as we have at Hub 1. They have a different expression across the street from what we have here, but again, there's nearly 400 lineal feet, continuous lineal feet of this streetscape. So it's really starting to have enough to have an impact. You're walking a long way And again, that's actually 600 lineal feet if you wrap around onto First Street. So there's a real presence with the streetscape that we feel is going to feel just terrific. And
Jeff, can I just add a second? Notice that the furniture is black.
I did.
That was part of the interim main gate policy. So
right.
You've been explaining that to everybody.
He's,
and as we went through this,
he's staring at me because you were at the meeting.
I was,
you know.
Well,
Tom,
I called Jim and I said, you know, we have silver storefront. I'd really like to use that. He said, Jeff, no.
Yeah.
So we're clear. The yeah. You know, the bike racks, everything out there.
We established that in the 90s with Woosabbit in the neighborhood. So
right.
The consistency.
So go ahead, Carrie, to the next. And again, you see it coming from the other direction. You know, these planters are really nice buffers.
Well, black goes with silver.
What's that? Black. It does. It's
in the same.
Todd, we're all good. We know which one.
Just wanted to put it on the record.
Yeah.
But again, you know, these. I think this illustrates a little better the buffer that these planters create against the sidewalk. So we like that a little bit. The other side of the sidewalk has a perforated metal that's that product there, like will be on the balconies. And that's down to some telehomes. So there's additional relief from the edge of the sidewalk. So I think it's going to create an interesting feel.
Yeah,
again, the variation in massing, it's really part of what we think is the success of this building at the street. Okay, Terry. So now we're into the elevations of the building. And we'll have the renderings that will follow afterwards. But we have a really interesting mix of materials with the building, very lively. Our idea, I think, just to recap, was that we wanted this to have a very different feel from our first phase, and we wanted to have a real dynamic presence on the street with a lot of variation in surfaces and massing and things like that. So the main surface materials are corrugated metal siding, the serpentine siding, very similar to the serpentine fences at the University of Virginia that Thomas Jefferson designed. So that was, serpentine, right? So we like that material. It's really, we think, the coolest looking corrugated siding. There are stucco areas, a lot of variation in lightness and darkness. That's these materials that you see here. And then we have edges of balconies that are painted varied colors. And again, we wanted also, being that it's a student-based housing project, we wanted there to be a certain playfulness and funness about the project, that it feels, it's serious, but it's also playful. And we have this variation of these balconies that kind of stagger a little bit back and forth that helps create a little bit of that. Okay, Carrie, you go ahead. And then just as a backdrop, we try not to get too much information on what drawing. This describes all of those materials on the surface of the building in the black and white. So we have that for each elevation. It's unfortunate Matt's not here to see this.
And I just want to point out that because of we're as far along as we are in the planning for this project, we have a pretty good sense of the floor plans.
Absolutely. Floor plans are included in it.
So we have a good sense of where
to avoid the surprises
where
of where windows
glazing,
are going
to work. Yes, some of the glazing and the
plumbing
windows
walls,
are going to be, yes.
You'll see where we have, as we get around, I'll get to it.
That's okay. Good.
Where we have,
yeah.
Where we
and we know that if anything changes, we'll be back in front of you.
Yeah. On the side elevation, the north elevation and then the alley elevations.
Oh, thank you very much.
I mentioned about just wanting to have some variations, some strong variations in the surface and on the building, you know, and you're seeing that here, how we kind of wrap this color in and these colors around. We also heard loud and clear that we wanted to have a little bit more going on along the base of the building, and we felt that we took the horizontal balcony elements that we had on the face of the building, we turned them vertical and kind of made this random sort of pattern that carried above the base of the building. And we feel that, again, that's a fun way of approaching that. And we said, hey, you know, we could take that and bring that up the side of the building also and even carry it in there and carry that element in. So we really like what that did for this. And those are these various colors of stucco. So the colors you see in here would be some of these darker colors along this lighter base color. Okay, Carrie, go on to the next. And then just the noted elements of the building describing the stucco elements and the windows and the screens. I'll go a little more in detail into the finishes a little bit later. Along the back of the building, if you can recall what we had previously, we had all the same colors here, and we broke up in between. So we have these two masses. And then there's a deep recess where we have our very large loading dock. It's actually twice the size the zoning requires. But we really broke this down into these masses and these elements in between, and we carried that kind of playful character along here. I want to vote this as best elevation in an alley. Somewhere, I'm sure that Tucson has something like that somewhere. But we felt that there's a lot going on in it for an alley elevation, and a lot of care is taken to them. One thing I wanted to also mention here is these windows in here are spandrel windows. There are closets and bathrooms behind those. So those are spandrel glass material, and I'll point that out when we get to the plan, but that's something that's built into it. As far as light goes, there's light from these outboard windows, and then up across here, that's all glass. And you know, when you see it in three dimensions, I believe those are the only areas that we have spandrel glass. It's really, these things at the end are always hard, the way our units plan out. So that is incorporated as part of the design.
Facing west also is tough.
And facing west, yeah.
And I also want to point, we pointed this out the last time, that loading area is not for students. All of the move in, move out is coordinated in the parking garage.
Right.
So it all takes place, it's not going to take place in that alleyway.
Really?
That's,
right.
Yes.
And we'll walk through how they do that, how they'll do that process for the loading. The garage actually set up really well for that.
That's nice.
Carry, let's go to the next one. And then I was mentioning these center windows are these spandrel glass windows. Otherwise, you know, we have the balconies that step back, so we have the terrace railings, and those are the perforated panels,
mm-hmm.
like such. There's some similarities to what we did next door just because of how we agreed to step back as part of the wood of, you know, concessions that are required there. One other thing I did want to point out is that we've indicated where we're going to try to get grillage, mechanical grillage out of the building. Those things sometimes
right.
may vary a little bit, but right now we're trying to play those in particular spots, and we'll try to make our as we develop the mechanical systems design, we'll try to make those work like that. If not, we'll make sure that that's made clear to everyone. South elevation, again, really a mirror of the north elevation. This is facing the north elevation of the hub one. So again, the lighter and the darker, with even darker trim. There's this element that's towards the front, which is a corrugated metal element that wraps and folds around the corner of the building. That really projects. That's projecting further south than this elevation by quite a bit, by like 30 feet. So there's some variation in that also.
So really, the only people who are seeing this elevation are the students in Hub Phase 1 who have windows
right.
on that side.
Primarily.
Just to give you
mm-hmm.
the perspective.
Yes, that's a good point. And again, just the black and white. Really, the notes kind of wrap around the building. And then, you know, what the building is going to look like. We've very similar to what we saw earlier. You know, aside from some of these refinements that have taken place. Again, very lively. We, the wing that wraps over, which is painted cementitious material, we feel is going to be a very strong and a very interesting element of the building, as well as providing a shading element. this glassy area that's on the east side during the morning light. But a very vibrant, elevation with a lot of presence on the street. The other important thing about this is that because of those townhomes there's eyes right there. You know, people are living right there. They're looking out from their living space, from their bedrooms and things. So that's always a good thing to have.
So ground level on this one is townhome.
Right.
And we'll actually see that amount of glazing on.
At the corner, that's the glass. Yes, the townhomes are less glazed. I think when you see some of the other images, you'll see that there's corrugated metal, and they have windows that are more like the other residential windows.
And the finished product will look like that as well.
Yes, that's the lot. This is the leasing center, and that's the lobby. So just like the lobby we have at our present in Hub 1, it's all glass, floor to ceiling.
What about as you go up? I think that's what you're
yes,
asking.
Yes, those are the spaces.
Yeah.
The idea is that that's a heavily glass facade, and the plans you'll see work with that facade.
Can I ask a question? We had a building that had a lot of glass, and they had a problem with the energy code. Do you see this as being problematic with the energy code?
It's not, because of the low-E glass that we use. We designed the enclosure based on, you know, the glass is part of a whole formula for the exterior massing of the building. And
right.
Our low-E glass, I mean, you'll see it's very... The low-E glass is more reflective because the technical idea is that it reflects out the light instead of allowing it to come in. So as part of our envelope, that may have a factor to make a glass that's somewhat more reflective, because of that, but our analysis, when we develop the design for the mechanical system, we'll take that into account. And keep in mind that even though there's a lot of glass there, when you factor it over the entire building, it's really, that's probably less than 10% of whole facade.
And your floor plans are supportive of a glass wall.
Yes, you'll see that when we get to the floor.
Also, reflectivity, we've noticed there's some reflectivity downtown, especially along the west elevation. You don't see any real issues.
Well, you know, there is that reflectivity. I mean, it is part of...
Sort of a trade-off.
But you know, I think, you know, the good thing is it's the east elevation, so by, depending on the time of the year, by noon, it's the light, you know, that it's really not a factor there. It'd be worse if it was west because it's just getting that much warmer.
Well, it also plays into the fact that Campus Acquisitions has the...
There's a tremendous, yeah.
The building's shaded.
It's highly shaded.
That's what I was thinking.
It's highly shaded.
They get so much shade from the building across the street.
You know, there's a window of time in there, depending on the time of the year, where we will get it, but it's a short window.
Yeah, that building's 70 feet higher, too.
That's right.
So
there is a condition, though, if you're heading to the east on Speedway, where that building might interplay with the sunlight. Coming down and reflecting to the
island. It will. But again, you know, this area, keep in mind, right, this is 40-some feet. It's not over a facade that's, you know, from end to end is almost 190 feet. It's really just a small percentage. So it's glassy in that area, but...
Yeah, in that picture, when you said that percentage, it looks much larger. It looks like the perspective looks like it's, you know, a lot more.
Let's put it this way. There's less glass there than there is on the corner of our building at First and Tyndall.
Right. Yeah, it's just the way the perspective is.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right, so it's prominent.
Are Wuna residents going to need darker sunglasses?
Well, we're looking, that's really facing the other way, so I leave that to you.
I hear Core Campus has glasses, they sunglasses.
Eric, you can model the pair that your son is wearing.
As an observation, to have an area with a lot of glass, this is absolutely the right elevation to have that glass.
I think so too.
It points to the east and it won't be able to get into the neighborhoods.
You got a building on
I honestly think that's a really nice response to the streetscape.
Yeah, I do too.
That kind of glass and activation. So.
Yeah. And it's totally shaded, you know, in the mornings.
I think that when you see this, our colors are a lot different from the first phase, but they are sympathetic, and I think that's important. So that's, we didn't want it to feel forward. And really, our color palette is pretty similar. And some of these dark colors you see quite a bit across the street. So we think that it's going to feel, although very different from both of those buildings, going to feel like it belongs with them. View looking to the north. Again, you see more of this, how that corrugated I mentioned earlier wraps around the side. And you see the really the more residential scale windows at those townhomes behind this fence along here. So that's where I was saying it's very glassy here, but then you know, as it changes here, it's not so much. We do have this corrugated side. It doesn't wrap around, I'm going to call this our wig. This is a darker product. It's a darker paint product than what we have here. That's intentional just because that's acting as a whole different sort of a foil to the siding elements of the building. Just another perspective looking a little bit more forward. Originally we were considering this, I think we had mentioned that this was going to be concrete. We're proposing this is all stucco. This will be high impact stucco lower. We end up that it's not going to be a concrete building, we believe. So we're proposing this as a stucco element. So all the colors you see like this are stucco. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
That's on Tyndall?
That's on Tyndall, right. And again, looking back south, and you see kind of how this element sort of plays at the end of the building. I think that's, we're really happy with how dynamic that feels with the color and the variation, how it breaks it up. It carries, we think those takes and turns, that thing on the front, we were really happy with how that turned out. As we get around to the rear, we see how that kind of ties in a three-dimensional drawing, it ties around to the recess at the back of the alley, and then how these materials, again, overlap, and there's that kind of playfulness. There is a pool up at the roof, so there'll be a high guard rail around that also, so that's what you're seeing up there.
So the rooftop pool, the rail, what edges of the building, what is it?
Let's call it the north wing of the building, so that wraps around the entire north wing.
It's a similar edging to our phase one where it has the railing and then a significant amount of vegetation that keeps the students from interacting with the edge.
So students don't get up against the rail to hang over and drop or throw stuff.
There's vegetation, yeah, as you see, so wrapped around it. And again, here I think you can see how that variation in color really does play up quite a bit. You know, it's interesting, this image here doesn't show, well, we had a couple of the other ones, doesn't show that variation.
Which we're putting in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll make sure that's correct. And it's shown on the elevations, it's shown on the other.
Back to Carrie's comment, there's going to be a rooftop pool up there?
Yes, there is.
But it can it be seen from the other buildings, from the campus acquisition buildings, as far as interaction?
I suppose it would be visible from the building across the street.
The upper floors probably see it.
Right.
And the upper floors, Tom just left, but I think on the campus acquisitions, those upper floors just have those pop-out windows. I don't think they have any ability to engage, which I think is what you're worried about.
I was thinking more
about
the pool than the other rooftop.
Yeah.
Can you see from pool to pool?
No, I don't think you can.
I don't think you can get to the edge of their pool. It's got a similar design, but you have to be a certain distance away from it.
Yeah, kids can be pretty silly about that sort of thing.
One other point I wanted to show you that we don't see elsewhere is that we have this cutout here. This is for the electrical transformer. So we're, you know, knowing what we went through in the first phase, we're showing those elements now. We know that we're going to have it. It's going to be back along our mechanical or electrical room. So those are things that, you know, this design, we're kind of ahead of the curve, we feel, as far as being able to incorporate a lot of these things that we dealt with in the same manner next door.
On the pool question, I do think it's a good thing that you located this pool as far away from phase one hub rooftop areas as, and it's quite a ways across the street.
Quite a ways, yeah. Those two are too far away.
It looks like, you know, that is the ideal of the options you have. That's the best place to put it.
This whole wing separates that. It's you know,
and still there's that buffer that keeps them from looking over the historic.
That's right.
As well.
Plus it's set back, you know, you're already set back,
right.
You know,
and
plus or minus 20 feet.
Which is good as well.
I'm going to talk, go to the board and talk a little bit about this. So we talked earlier about the accordion metal siding that makes up a good portion of the, you know, I had to carry this through a security case, so I guess we got this. So, again, this corrugated metal siding, there will be two colors of that. We have a variation of stucco colors, which I think you saw as we went through the elevation. Prominent, really, these are the two prominent colors, and these are detail colors. And then at those fascias of the balconies, we have this colors that really play along with these are a little different, but they play. So that's those edges that you see here and here. And then over here, these colors kind of play together. Then the balcony railing, really the infill panel, is a perforated metal panel. Very kind of, we like that, has a certain urban character to it. The silver color, it's a painted window, but the silver color of the windows are glass, and this is a reflective, this is a low-E glass, so you can see the reflectivity, but actually it plays kind of nicely with the spandrel glass, so I think, again, those things are going to be very indiscernible almost. And, you know, really, it's a pretty simple palette, which has a lot of things that repeat. This is this area where we're going to use a cementitious, painted cementitious material. That would play the same colors. You know, when we have edges like that, that's playing with that same color. So we don't, we're trying to keep it simple and not have too many variations and variables playing through it, but a repeat of a theme and a repeat of colors.
Can you further describe the cementitious material?
It's a solid panel as painted. It's it'll look almost like an enamel panel. It's very stable, so it takes paint, but it's much better than wood and other materials because it doesn't move.
Is it resin or what's it made of?
It's like a resin, yeah. It's a non wood product cement sort of panel.
It's cement board, basically.
It's a cement board panel, yeah. So it's a really good material from a maintenance standpoint because it holds paint because it's so stable. It works really well for that sort of product, so that's what we're proposing. On the inside face of that, and the outside is, which we're not seeing here, is the darker color of the corrugated siding.
Is any of your painted exterior metal powder coated?
Some of it would be. things that are, I would say probably much of it would be.
What would?
Like the railings would be, because they would come out painted already. It's.
I like the use of like this perforated metal, because you wouldn't presumably paint that, right?
Well, I think the product that we'll have will end up being a painted product, but it would be a powder coated product that's painted in the shop. You know, it's Bob, it's hard to say exactly if there will be any materials that are painted on site, but I would say most of it. Like the products we have on
It's good that the things that are prominent that you see are a higher quality, yeah. So that they don't start peeling, because it always takes a while to get around to repainting them.
Yeah.
That true. Period.
So well, it's an interval paint.
Yes.
The UV tear it up. It's like a roofier's,
right.
So it's less of a light than it does in Chicago.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah. It's a day like today. So I mean, those are good points, but I think most everything would be. But there's a few things. For instance, the trellis that we're putting on the building now. We have a trellis down here that's going to be structural steel.
Right.
That's going to be painted. It'll be sprayed, but it'll be painted in the field. So that's one that you really don't have a choice, because it's fabricated in place. Okay. So floor plans, and you have these in your sheets. I'll try to, I know that they're a little bit small up here, but we have the townhomes. So there's a first floor. This is overall site plan. Entry into the garage. I was mentioning how they would do the
movement. So north is to the right on this, right?
North is. So they would do the move as they would come in and circle all that way and then pull back out. So a very simple process. People can stack up in here and then they come around and there's a back door into the elevators, to the elevator lobby. So it's a very simple process. They get our big loading dock. And I think this was a concession we made because of the alley. It's really twice the size of what the code or what the zoning requires.
So you get people out of the alley. You don't have people.
Yeah, so a garbage truck can pull back into there. And that's really the only people that will be back there anyway. So. But anyway, so that was the reason for that. We felt that was something we ought to do to make that work. So the three townhomes, there are steps to each one of those, individual entrances to each of those. Mm-hmm. They have rear doors that takes them into the garage if they want to go up to the roof, so they can do that without going outside, but that is how that functions. And then we have our leasing center.
And those have designated parking?
Not any different than if they don't,
not any different
if they don't buy it. Yeah, no different. I'm just saying they have direct access to the parking. There's, these people will come down the elevators and go around. They can just walk out their back door. Parking on one level, we have 68 spaces for 93 units, a higher ratio than we have next door. We also have 89 bike parking spaces in this area.
68 here. Spaces for how many units?
For 93.
And how many beds?
290. We also, as we're talking about this, we have a drop-off, which is something I think that everyone felt was important to keep traffic moving along so people can pull over taxis. If you're picking someone up, you're not in the street. So, and then we have bollards that align that, just like we have over here in phase one. So similar things happening there.
Just on the parking question, the same situation that we discussed previously. It appears that looking at what happened first year at campus acquisitions, that the parking thoughts about being so many fewer required than what we'd seen in the past appear to be potentially accurate. So, but still, we feel that we need to take the approach, and we will again on this one as we did in the first one, that we're not going to sell permits to our U of A garages to these students until all waiting lists are done and we're confident that our others are accommodated.
Right.
Okay.
And again, there was
adding that, the experience with the lease of our building, which is now there's three beds left. And it has, the ratio has worked.
Do you have parking spaces left still?
No.
You sold
we don't
them
have
all
beds
out.
Left either.
Yeah.
So
they sold out at about the same time?
Mm-hmm. Roughly each other.
Okay.
The other factor is this one actually comes much just right at almost the university's recommendation in the materials you gave
closer,
us for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's much higher ratio of parking. Now really, that's really not, we still think that the first building's ratio is fine, but it's what we're experiencing nationally. We're building buildings, even like in Madison, with 15% parking. But the design of the building is, and the height of it,
Yeah, we just don't want to see, you know, your students not having a place to park.
No, we agree.
Because then they end up in neighborhoods or God knows where, and that's just not what any of us want.
No, it's not God knows where, they end up in the neighborhood.
Yeah, so I appreciate that.
We know where they end up.
So I appreciate that, you know, that we continue to talk about this, and thanks for the input on your first lease up. I would like at some point for us to really do a more thorough survey of all of the, all three of them that are going to be finished this year to find out how many students have cars, how many have them parked there, and how many are parking somewhere else if we can. I don't know. I know that there was some discussion of having another lot or parking area off campus if there was an overflow requirement. Can you tell us where that's gone in the first one?
Well, we researched it and we know what the options are. For the most part, the availability of that sort of facility is too far from probably the building to be very effective. We do have some of those options and they're still open to us.
Well, if you have students bringing cars to campus that can't park in your garage, then that's a problem for us.
Understood.
Because they're going to go somewhere else. So, you need to continue to have options that are close enough for them to be viable.
Well, we have an option that is, all of them are, our question would be, if you get too far, we pursued a lot along the trolley, mm-hmm. because we thought, well, okay. If the trolley was there, but that, mm-hmm. all of that real estate has gotten, well, gone or gone up, but it's generally not.
Well, that was the whole idea. That was predictable and that was desired and hoped for. And
The property that we've identified that we think would be the most logical is still available.
I just would like to ask that you all don't lose sight of that for either hub project. And it's possible, too, I recall that the philosophy was that these are slightly higher end units and that they're, and that this group may potentially have more resources, may have more car desires. I don't know. But I just would like to continue to keep that right in front of us.
Sure.
Because
it's more ability to pay
still
for
a concern.
The annual modern yeah. streetcar pass.
Can I ask a question? It's regarding parking.
Sure.
Okay, wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So, my sister and I own the property due west of phase two, 1036, 1040, duplexes, all that property. It's the gated mm-hmm. little wrought iron area. Because I had talked to Tom several months ago, I was thinking parking, because I knew parking was going to be a problem, and I know our two historic houses are going to be there forever, but the entire back was rezoned. And I had mentioned to Tom, would you might be interested? And he said he was told that we could only go up two stories there, and that wouldn't be enough for a parking. And I thought it was three stories, but Tom, could you, who told you two stories, or?
And I'm recalling that by the code, it was three stories, but someone had said that because of, and you, Carrie, maybe you'll help the historical context, this came up at something that it would likely be limited to two.
It has to be within a historical context
right.
in the overlay document.
And so, someone along the way had said it would be unlikely you'd get three stories.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact height that was in the overlay document.
It was three. It's 40 feet.
40
what you
feet.
Have to understand is that's 40 feet
stories.
To work with, but whatever gets built there cannot delist the property.
Cannot
delist
the other property that's going to remain
historic
a story.
Have the effect.
It can't have the effect. It would delist the properties that you just mentioned would be there forever.
Yeah.
It can't affect those in a negative way where they would be delisted.
Right.
But the 40 feet really in today's world is two stories.
But it would be a three-story parking.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you could have three stories of parking
yeah.
right in that area,
that's,
right next to your building, I thought that would be good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, because the parking garages aren't as high as a building.
Right, yeah.
Building,
so if we could do three-story, I was trying to help get out of the parking problem.
Yeah. Especially if you recessed a little bit of the first one.
So is that a possibility?
Yeah, I apologize. I thought you were talking about the viability of doing another project on your property.
It was too small, probably. But you know what? We're just thinking of options now. just waiting.
Yeah, that's a possibility, as long as the design is proper, where it doesn't delist what's in front.
And we can do a historic, is whatever you guys want from a historic angle, okay? I had another question, and it may not, it may be phase two, I'm not sure. My son owns 1036 North Euclid, and he had, I mean, it's a nice house, we rehabbed it. An attorney was interested in taking it over for commercial, but he wanted to put parking in the front if we could. Two spots for customers to park there. He doesn't mind parking in the back. So I had an engineer look, and yeah, we could put a, cut the curb and come in, go down onto 1040 and out, and we would have room for four spots. If we wanted to put parking in the front, who do I, what do we start if we decided to rent to the attorney and he would rehab it some more to make it more, who would we start to talk to about something like that?
You talk to Planning Development Services. You
talk to Frank Dillon.
Who?
Frank Dillon.
Frank Dillon, okay. Planning, Jim
Development Wood? Services. Planning. Frank Dillon.
At Planning
Development Services.
Development Services, right. Okay.
And that was the intent on those buildings for the neighborhood, that eventually the new people wouldn't live there, but it was
right.
To have commercial uses for okay. the buildings to keep the historic integrity of the buildings.
Right. We want to keep that. We have plenty of room up front.
That was the discussion.
His main complaint says he's not going to say, okay, go to the alley where Greasy Tony's is and turn in to buy it.
Right.
He didn't mind parking. Okay. Thanks.
Sure. Just in a larger version of that last plan, don't know that really tells us that much more. So second floor plan, this reaches out all the way to the alley. There is a courtyard in the center, and then there's landscaped terrace areas at the first floor, and then there are balconies above towards the north. We think that there may be some opportunities in the courtyard and at this location here for water harvesting. That's something we're going to pursue. To see if it makes sense with this project. We think that there is a possibility that that could be something. It could also potentially even be an architectural element. So that is something that we're looking at. With this, I also wanted to point out a couple of things. We have our exercise facility on the street. Again, there's activity, and that's kind of a fun element that's lit up, you know, into the evening, which is a nice element. And we're talking about some differentiation in product. Bob had asked us about this before. We have a couple, really three unique unit types here. We have those townhomes at grade, which is a unique type. We have two-story townhomes within the building, so they stack up in the building. So that's kind of another special sort of a unit. And with Core Campus, we'd also developed these small units over here. We call them micro studios. They're 264 square feet. Three of these make up the same space as a three-bed unit. It allows people to have individual units that are studios. They don't want to have to have roommates if they want to, but they can have it at us. It's probably more expensive than being in that same three-bedroom, but it's another unit type that we did not have in the first phase, and they found that that's something that there's been a lot of really great response to it. So for people that want to live alone, that's something that's unique, we think, in the market here to provide that. But those units have all the amenities that you'd have in everything else as well. Stacking washer, dryer, full-size bathroom, great kitchen. You know, it's really done just in clever ways. There's seating that takes up, you know, has multiple functions, things like that. So I thought that was worth mentioning. As we go up the building, then there's just similar plans. This is all residential units as we get up to the third floor. And then the fourth floor is the same. And then the fifth floor, we start to step back. And then the sixth floor, we step back again at the terraces, again the same. The units vary and change at the end. And you can, Carrie, go back down two more. I was pointing out about, this is where the spandrel glass is, where, I know it's small here, but their bathrooms or closets, but out here is where the glass is visible. So that's, you know, why we have those as spandrel glass elements that within the cavity of the wall, those would fit. So let's go back up and then to the wood board, up to the roof. So we have mechanical equipment towards the south side. The elevator core, you come up, there's outdoor spaces here, and then back to the pool, and then to a small hot tub area over here, towards the rear. I think Judith's place is over here. Distance-wise, it's pretty far. There is that landscape buffer, so we feel that that's going to be we don't think that that's going to be much of a sound issue with her. And then
on that point, Because we have a seven tenants on this side of Judy,
sure.
Right on the other side.
Right over here, yeah.
So why are you just saying Judy, when we have seven residential tenants?
She's been a very big concern with the projects as we've been developing.
Okay, so we kind of...
Same with you. I mean, I'm
we
sure
have
that's
tenants, so too. Is it going to be...
But, you know, she's... I guess my point is, she's over here. This thing is buffered around the perimeter.
Is there a
with
fence
nice material. Yes.
So they couldn't throw stuff?
We have high fences.
High
yes,
fences.
We do.
Okay.
And that, you know, it's not that someone who could be coming in to throw straight up,
yeah.
But generally, yes, there was a high fence that you have to really try. We are set back already, and then that is up, you know, a height. You know, so that's the top of the building. It's 84 feet. You're set back, you know, as, you know, with a straight line, you're... To your space, you're probably 100, to your property line, it's probably 140 feet, something like that, 130 feet, if you take the angle from up here to down there. So there's some distance, and the sun, I think, is going to go up before it kind of climbs over either way. So
you're talking zip line there. That's
you could zip line, yeah. But you know, where there's going to be noise is going to be more around the pool, we know that, so that's not really that as noisy, we know it's not. And then a building section showing our six floors, the elevator overrun, the maximum height of 84 feet. And again, some of this just reiterates. You can see how these two, the top of stack, they stepped out a little bit, and then there's back steps, and then we're back up to the parking garage. Again, 68 parking spaces, 89 bike parking spaces, 93 total units, 290 beds, about half of the beds we had in the first phase. And then this is a section looking the other way, so there's the two wings that have the courtyard in between. Right, the courtyard, and then this is the first pub first phase, and then there's their outdoor area over there also. We get into shadow studies. This is as of, what's today? Today's the night. 2 weeks, about 2 weeks from now. So the shadows are very short in the summer. They really have very little impact on anyone. Let's go ahead to the next one. Our shadows are, it's interesting, we did the shadows of this building in red, so you can see the overlap from the campus acquisitions buildings and our buildings, and the we just get past the alley towards the west in the morning sun, towards the north, they're fairly short shadows even at this time of the year, and they do cross the street a bit towards the east in the afternoon, but still, you know, relatively short shadows from this building, it's not that big of a building. The shadows are certainly much longer in the winter, but it's this little gap is the only gap that isn't already shadowed by the other buildings. So the effect of it is interesting because of that. We do go about halfway towards Speedway during the middle of the day, and then towards the end of the day, the shadows are a little bit long towards the east, but really stretching across the parking lots. Don't think that they're that as shadows go that they're having a hugely negative impact. And then.
I dare you to read this.
I don't get it. But you read your book. So this is the zoning analysis that we've been talking about. Really, it talks a lot about the height, a lot of the height requirements and different things, but that's there for nighttime reading.
But this is all the design criteria that are right. In the main gate overlay so that you all know that we have
right. Reviewed
them. And
right, so actually the next one is our response to the main gate district design standard compliance. So these are some of the items are selective items that we can choose from a menu. Other ones are things we have to comply with. So this describes the items, section by section that we're satisfied. And then plant materials, like I had mentioned earlier, really the same pallet that we have next door. The pastiche tree is the street tree. We have the same native deciduous or indigenous materials for the lower plant materials of the planters. That goes for the street trees. Let's go ahead and carry up to where we have larger trees and trees that are up as part of the building landscape. And then the shrubs, they're all shrubs that belong, all the plant material that's going to thrive and do well here. We'll have the same landscape architect on this project as we had on the last one, so that right of continuity carries through with
yeah, who did you use? Stuff I forgot.
NC Design, Yvette NC. She's a local. She's an
NC.
NC.
E-N-S-I-G-N.
Right.
E-N-S. N-Sign.
Oh,
N-Sign. N-S-I-G-N.
And she's a local Tucson landscape architect.
Yvette.
And then some of the other, again, local flora that we'll be using. the building. None of this is on the street. These are up in some of the planter areas up on the building. So that's everything. Thanks for listening through it. There was a lot of material there. But we got it out of the box this time, so I think last time it took a couple of meetings. So we'd love to answer any questions that that anyone may still have.
Just a few general thoughts. One is that, that these are a lot more fun going through a second time with the design team. An awful lot of the things that we talked about before are already here, and appreciate that you carried over things that we, the input, and we gave you a lot of input the first time around, and just got all of those elements have been adapted here already, and so that's appreciated. And I think, I'll be honest, I like this project better than your first phase by quite a lot. I think it's a little more scalable. I think that the elevations, especially along the streetscape, are, I like that there's a little less stucco, a little more articulation, and a not as large of surfaces that are unbroken. I like the glazing patterns a little better on this one. I think this is a pretty nice project. There's one area that I just a little uncomfortable with, and that is if you look at the west, what you call the nicest alley facade in the west, is
what page is that?
It's it's on page 16 from a distance, and then it's on some others. You can see it on page 19. My question is that it appears that there's the first before the first setback. There's a number of levels and a pretty healthy mass there.
Can you get it up so we can see it?
It's going forward.
Well, this was 16.
Yeah. So
this
you can look
19.
At that one for a minute. I'm just talking about the just over the tops of the houses facing to the west.
You had a picture of it before.
Is there a different
window? This is fine for me to talk to. Part of the, and this isn't a huge issue for me, but it feels like that there's quite a lot of stucco wall there on those two wings facing to the west, because of, they go up a certain height before you start setting back. And part of this is I don't know, I think that when we see elevations that have the light, bright colors, and the elevations that are utilizing a darker, more receding color, I think this is part of what impacted me visually on their first phase on facing west, when there was more stucco and less window, is that there's just seems to be more prominent, that there's a lot of stucco on the wall there, and I just
I saw a picture of this. I was gonna, we own the property right where you're talking.
I understand.
Yeah, and it is, and I wish we could see it, because right now because my son, in fact Carrie at the beginning of this conversation started that there was only two residents living there. That's not true. There are one. There were two. My son lived there.
Sir, that's why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah. Oh, okay, but can I say something?
It's
up to the committee, It's just
go ahead.
Okay. There's always been two residents there, and we've always got this impression that it's only Judy, and it's kind of bothered us. My son lived there.
That's not what we're doing. Right now we're representing you.
Okay.
And we're trying to say the things that I think you're trying to say.
And I agree.
So don't say
that
we're not considering
no,
that you
and
live
I'm
there.
Glad. But Carrie mentioned at the beginning that Judy was, my son moved 9 months ago. He said, I'm not going to live next to this.
Okay.
I'm not going to see my sunrises anymore. And he moved at great expense. And I guess Judy got some kind of compensation package. My son moved because of this. Is there, who would we talk to?
I don't know,
that?
But this is not the right place to bring those forward.
Who
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not the city, I don't know.
Okay.
All right. If you can talk to somebody after the meeting or something.
Who would
I
we
think
talk
that'd
to
be great.
After the meeting?
I don't even know. This isn't
I'm
the right
asking,
place to ask. I don't know.
You can talk to me, but I don't know if I have your answers.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, John.
So
does this better illustrate what
you're talking about? That kind of shows it. My sense is that there's, and maybe it's because we're a little sensitized by this from experience with the other building, the first phase, but that it just feels like it's a pretty large wall with a lot of bright yellow stucco on it. And it's not, yellow's not the color.
Yeah. You know, Bob, what opportunity we might have, and I'm talking about, you know, from here up, is, and I'm looking at the plan, is I believe that we could probably do like a double window for this glazed area at either end of these, and we can take that window and go inside, and maybe we, you know, we rejigger them a little bit just to reduce, because the corner, there's a swell area there,
yeah,
and that doesn't look like a very big area there, but we can kind of
glaze those a little bit. My personally think, I'd like to get some of the others' opinions too, but I personally think that...
Is that what you're talking about?
Those two walls. I personally think that there's quite a lot of bright stucco wall facing west and facing the homes that are there, and then facing visually for a long distance beyond those homes.
And for a long length of time.
Now, I'm saying that so many things here I really like and I really appreciate, yeah, and I don't want you to feel as though I'm just, you know, being critical. I think that this is really well done. This is the single thing that has impacted me visually that I think I would like to see worked on. But that's what I would like, and I would open to it.
Because the buildings on Skidway and Euclid aren't going to change, you know, in height, so that's going to be exposed.
I think that we could make it mean something by, if we wanted to consider it, where we have either it's a bigger window, like one window with a division, but we could do that in a way that would allow us to reduce the stucco area along that wall.
Take a look at your east elevation and how effective that is. And I know you can't do that, but even the north elevation, you know, there's some articulation, there's some elements there, there's maybe a little more glass or stucco, and I think that the bright color of stucco also has some effect.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, Bob, that east north elevation has so much more dark stucco to it, besides glass, would bring it down, the color.
I hate to mess around with their whole scheme, but...
Yeah.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, you're responding to the neighborhood better with this approach, and more honestly, because the first time they had a lot more fenestration, and it, you know, and it didn't materialize in the final product. In this case, they're presenting it up front. It has that more vertical element to it that responds to the history and the context.
So the, you know, these elements over here are pretty low rise, and so that.
Right, and that was the idea, to kind of bring the scale down.
They just feel like large stucco walls to me. Yes. I appreciate there's some fenestration. I appreciate that you put in spandrel glass. That helps. That would be really, really tough if not for that. I just would ask, could that be further improved?
The Speedway buildings. I'm with you.
Especially on the upper floor.
Are those the ones you're talking about?
Because the lower first floor down is going to be more covered up by trees and houses. Yeah. But the upper floor, if that could be even mostly spandrel glass going across. Or, I don't know, finding ways of preventing that from looking like a big expanse.
Okay. There may be some fun ways that we could do some things. I would like to keep it here because I really... What we did, we tried to bring the scale of the building down by creating like a shoulder here.
Uh-huh, I understand.
And I like how that worked.
And it really works on the north side.
Yeah, so I think that there's some things that...
What about the Juliet or something like that? Do you have the balconies which add another level of depth? I know we can go on the alley, but some kind of panel with the Juliet, maybe it's a tube or something. You know, I'm just looking because we think it works on the north.
I don't think you get six.
If we get six. Or we can add glass, and you know, I think the dark band of stucco helps break it up. You can play around with that a little bit.
there's some.
Yeah, so I don't have your solution, but it's something that I would like to see addressed, and to reduce the impact of that large wall looking over those homes to the west.
Okay.
And looking out beyond for a long ways.
Thank you.
Looking at it.
Good point. Do you think a little color? I'm not in there. I like the windows, but...
I'm going to see if they can solve it. They've done well before, so I just think that's a concern. And I don't know, Jim, you agree, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we were just talking about it. Yeah, both agree. The one point I'd like to bring up, Jeff, is, and it's very minutia, but as far as there's so much, you know, walking pedestrian, right? That part that's stucco along Tyndall that goes right to the ground, that it's not shielded, right there, thanks, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
That in 3 years could look terrible.
Yeah.
For the first, I mean, it could be literally just junk. You know, I think that you want to, I don't mind the stucco, say, you know, above 8 feet or six, but just needs, I think, just for the integrity of the project, you want some kind of wainscoting in, if it's precast concrete, you know, just something that's going to be able to take the wear and tear.
It'd even be nice if that were a gesture at that level that tied the two buildings together.
Together, yeah.
Rather than a dissimilar element that separates.
It kind of sticks out.
At the ground plane, that'd be great to have that feel like there's a continuity between the two projects, at least.
Between over here?
Yeah, the yellow stuff there, the stucco that's shown.
Right.
Tom was just talking
kind
about.
Kind of like an add-on architecture.
Yeah, it looks a little out of place. In addition to the wearability of the stucco.
No, it's a good point.
Yeah, it's kind of tack on. And then I'm really concerned with the materials, because our experience has been we've got a real hard surface of wainscoting any place we go. Otherwise, it just gets beat up.
I like the planting above. What is it that's behind there again?
That's a terrace.
That's a terrace back there.
That's a terrace that serves.
Because you actually can make that appear to where you can see the green roof effect of that. That's going to be.
Yeah, that's right. It has a lot to this.
Uh-huh.
It has a lot to that character.
But the building, it'll just look, just wear and tear.
Still
dealing with 18 to 20 year old, 21.
It definitely has a different character from this perspective as opposed to the west perspective.
Yeah.
I agree with Bob's comments in a general sense. I think you guys did a terrific job.
Thank you.
Overall.
Is this going to be open to non-students?
They all are.
It has to be.
Yes, so you can't live there.
Oh, that's right.
You can't live there.
I want to meet the students who live in the townhouses, Bob.
No, I think it's pretty well done. I really do. And I really like the Tyndall streetscape. So
we're excited about that.
Any other comments or discussion?
A question for Jim. Do we know of anything that could happen between here and Speedway in that lot? Is there any potential activity, change of ownership, or any thoughts of that being developed? Because that has another, I think that could be what, 30 feet or so. And I'm just curious as to what that's going to be the final piece between these buildings.
There's 56 feet is what the main gate says.
But you're not aware of any activity
no.
to have that upgraded or have any of that redeveloped?
No. Eventually, they could come in.
They're definitely brokers running around that have been for the last year. Okay. Yeah, nothing's happened.
Because I got to think that's going to become more and more valuable with so many customers here in these buildings that would be something.
I know the massing and the overlay district materials shows that there's something happening. You're more of a
56 feet
commercial
four stories.
Right. Okay, I was just curious. One other thought that's a real minor one is when you come in from Speedway, you're going to have the big hub sign on the north that we looked at. You can see right there. Are people coming in going to have a way not to be confused about which hub they're going to? Therefore where they should park and where they should wait, because there's two hubs and they have different entrances.
I mean, aside from the addresses, this is going to have a different identity.
Yeah, we're not going to, we're not sure how we're going to mark it. I don't think we're going to call it like hub
just,
two.
Just a thought,
because
we were concerned about taxis.
Right.
We're concerned about a lot of things here that confusion is not our friend. So I'm just asking that you think about how people will know.
So
why
be called?
I don't think it's going to be a hub in the way this is. It'll differentiate it. They need to differentiate it because they're trying to make this a little bit different product. So
it'll have another sign package.
Yes,
So this is where you have to go back to that. My lesson on how this all worked. This is one of them that's subject to the 50 square feet. Total of signage. So if we stay within 50 square feet of signage, no matter how it's branded, then we just go through and get
across.
If in fact we're going to request more, it goes to the sign code advisory and appeals board as a variance. So it doesn't, that sign package wouldn't wouldn't hit you.
I think we can all pretty much guess where it would go on this building. If you had a high sign.
Because there's no retail in the building.
And we haven't figured out what that is in large part because we haven't figured out the branding. We've called it Hub 2 for purposes of this.
That's good for
you. You all know what Hub 1 is. Quick clarification and kind of question for so far, and there might be more comments, but it sounded like there weren't any. So the two issues that we've heard about was making sure this has some material that withstands time, right, and maybe does a better job of bridging from Hub 1 to Hub 2. And then in, on the west facade, figuring out how to mellow out the stucco, particularly on the...
That's a fairly serious one for me.
Okay. So we obviously, what we would love nothing more is to come out of here today with an approval, even if it's an approval with some conditions. So is, and this is, I'm making this request as the applicant, and then I'll keep my mouth shut and you can do what you want to do as the deciding board. What we would love is an opportunity for an acknowledgement of everything that's good about this and the potential for an approval with some conditions, which could include us working through some of the alternatives with DRC members or to allow us to start moving the project forward, because we're at a stopping point until now that we've hit summer. Getting a quorum together of you all is can be difficult at best.
Is that any reason policy-wise why we wouldn't be able to give an approval with a couple of major caveats like that?
I know you came up with a letter of conditions. I think we'd want to make that part of it in terms of the design process that we've already gone through. That include inspections and so forth.
Well, that happens anyway.
Yeah, that happens anyway.
I think that we will.
So that doesn't need to be restated in this or not?
No. Let me answer your question. I think what Carrie would love is if there was a clear approval and these issues that aren't represented visually, that could be handled by what I'm going to call a subcommittee of the DRC. Like we did the caulking and the other project. And one member would be the design professional, and one or two members of the DRC would make sure that the conditions that were placed on here have been realized in some visual manner. That's one way of handling it that I'm sure they would prefer. The other is we continue it and they come back with the changes.
If we approve that, what I suggest is, and I suggest approving it, but on the two issues that we brought up, the one that Bob, which is very significant because it's so visual, as Jim and I were talking, as far as the subcommittee, you know, the person that brought it up, I would recommend be on the subcommittee, and I would recommend Jim be on the subcommittee from the West University.
Absolutely need one in the neighborhood.
Because otherwise I don't think it's valid. And I think the West University neighborhood should be definitely represented. My personal opinion. I don't have an objection to approving everything else except for those two subjects that we brought up.
I wouldn't either.
Well, we'd appreciate that. I'd also say that, and our goal in all this is to meet those concerns.
Yeah.
So, you know, we.
But it's important that we
right.
do. You know, I want to have your commitment that we will do what we need to do.
Otherwise,
to fix that.
Well, yes,
and not here later. Well, you know, we'd like to help you with that.
No, there's no permit.
We're not going to do that. And we already have the approval. I just want to make sure.
I think there's, for this condition, there's multiple great solutions. So,
yeah. But
we're happy to take out your challenge to approve that.
Well, unless there's further discussion from other members, I think we can move to make a motion.
So someone would have to help me with this potentially, but I would move that this be approved with two condition of two elements that need to be resolved through a subcommittee of the design review committee. And those two issues are, number one, the west-facing facade and the amount of stucco and just the west-facing facade and its impact on the community, neighbors in the community. And the second would be the element on Tyndall that separates this project from the first phase of HUD.
Okay, that's the motion.
I second.
Second.
Do you want to name the people in the subcommittee?
I vote for that.
Jim, would you want to be on it? You've got some continuity.
In the absence of Matt, who's more skilled than I am in this area, I will, certainly.
Okay, so me, Jim, is that more emotional?
Would it us be on it? Does that not, we own all the property right next door.
You'd have input for sure. And can't be on, you're not on the design.
You're not on the committee, but you can come and give your input.
Could you put my name down?
Or we could circulate the drawings to him too.
I mean, it's a public meeting, so you're welcome to come to.
What you can do is you can give me your name and phone number, and when they meet, I can let you know.
Okay.
When that is, if that's okay with you, the subcommittee does.
So the motion's been put forward, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimously with the conditions that were presented.
Thank you.
Next item.
Thank you for a nice effort.
Thank you.
For making this tremendously different experience than the first one.
Future agenda items?
Yeah, there's one more agenda item.
One more agenda.
What am I missing?
Number five.
Okay, back to hub number one. Phase one architectural approval. Discussion and action regarding conditions of approval.
Definitely.
This is the
Yeah, so if you remember when we had our meeting in May, you all approved 2B with, or not 2B, 2B to, as the solution. And the first condition was all metal grills on the west facade are to be powder coated rather than painted. There's a practical application issue that we want to bring back to you all.
The powder coating obviously is done in the shop. All of those grills are top riveted in place. We would destroy them, they're huge grills. So we would like to provide a field spray paint finish with a properly pried surfaces. Those grills right now are bare metal, so they're going to be very easy to put a proper finish on. We would just like to do that instead of, I mean, they will not come off. They're expensive. We'll have to replace them. So we would like to do a paint finish out of this. It is against a stucco area. All of the panels except for one are above where they could get beat up anyway. There is one at grade, which is the largest one. It is against a stucco wall that if the grill gets beat up, the stucco's getting beat up, so there's maintenance that would be taking place with both the wall surface as a maintenance thing.
How high did they go up? The other ones from grade?
The other ones are probably 16 feet up. They're quite
high.
16, they're high.
16.
Because they're in the second level of our garage.
Okay, what happened? I'm just curiosity, what kind of metal is it? It's galvanized?
It's a galvanized aluminum, which we'll be able to pry. Maybe it'll have a.
So it's not really going to rust.
It's not going to rust.
So I'll say, let's let it go.
It'll be etched, primed, and two finish coats.
I mean, based on the painting, we would use the manufacturer's recommendation for priming of those products. They're not a curl beam product. They actually have some texture to them.
Do we have a view of it? I'm thinking.
I'm sorry. Why don't you want to powder coat them?
Because they're all pop riveted in place. If you can see the one at grade, it will destroy it because you can't pull up pop rivets.
So take it off the wall in order to send it into the shop. You're saying it would destroy the panel.
Right.
And we are powder coating everything else. It's just those louvers. When we went out on site to take a look at the ability to pull things off, if they aren't already applied, to powder coat them. So we wanted to need to bring the issue back to you.
Yeah, what color are you going to paint them?
They would be the same color as the background. So there's the yellowish color. There was one panel that overlaps onto brick, so that would get kind of color like that. But primarily they'll be that yellowish color.
Maroon and gold.
Maroon and gold.
You know, they're somewhat reflective as they are now. I mean, you can see that they're different.
So I think the biggest concern, more than damage, is the sun and oxidization.
Sure.
You know, that the sun effect that it has on paint.
Yeah, within a couple of years, it starts fading.
Yeah. So is there no way to change the fastener method? I mean, could you not? You're saying it's going to destroy them?
They're in place to remove those pop rivets are not removable.
Well, and what we talked about too was, as we came back with this solution, is acknowledging that the whole reason for the powder coating condition was exactly that, the ongoing
right.
maintenance, and acknowledging that on this particular material on the west side, there will need to be more attention paid to the ongoing maintenance. And so, you know, anything that you all want to do to
how do we manage that? Or how do we?
Well, you know, I guess maybe one way of looking at it is we have panels that are above that are not going to take wear and tear, will be sun issues. But we do have other painted metal, like around the corner, we have our sunscreen trellis that's going
right.
to paint finish that's going to require periodic update, you know, repainting of things. These grills may require the same.
But what happens if we don't paint the grills, Jeff?
Well,
they're
just a natural metal. They're going to hold up better than even if they're powder coated as they are now. They'll never really change.
I can't recall what
kind
of
pattern.
If you remember, the reason was, and I'm sorry, we didn't bring. Does anyone have those?
Let me see.
The reason we were suggesting painting them was so that they blended in,
right on grade,
because they stuck out. They're a brownish color, and so it stuck out when you're standing there looking at the west facade. So the painting it was to have them blend in a little bit.
Right.
I don't think they look bad as they are.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning.
They're fairly reflective. They do kind of mirror the color that's around them.
Now those face the Marshall Foundation property,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So, that's why I'm on here.
We have
input from Jane. What?
We have that maintenance provision from the standard glass. You can put the same sort of thing on the panel.
Yeah, the answer that would get back to Bob's question. Right.
Yeah, so you could do.
So what do you think of that? Putting the same kind of a maintenance and aesthetic visual appearance requirement onto the painted metal surfaces
as far as that we have
on those spandrel windows.
We have it anyway.
I think that's probably the best way that we could make sure this gets accommodated, because otherwise, you know, this natural way of things, maybe not you guys, but whoever's managing this whole thing in 5 years, you know, may not care so much because it's not impacting rents that the west side doesn't look so good anymore, and we just like to have a way of making sure that we can enforce keeping that up as well. So I think that's one possible way to go. Is to have that same.
Yellow metal, though. Just, mm-hmm.
I wish I could see an elevation of this so that we could see.
I'm working on it.
It might not.
Keep talking. Just don't make it any worse for us while you're talking.
That could possibly be done as a warranty, extended warranty on a subcontractor. That's how it happens. Situations
I don't
know
about the paint. Well, he won't give you a warranty over 30 months.
Well,
he has half a brain, otherwise he'll be out of business.
I mean, he might charge more up front, but he'll give it to you. I mean, I've gotten him on other things.
Really, have you?
Yeah.
For this kind of thing?
Very similar to the situation.
So,
you're good.
Right, those are the grills.
Which are? These light colored things?
Yeah, and then the one down here.
And that one there?
Yeah, so those are all natural metal
right
now.
Yeah. And what's that?
That's grillage has a powder coat finish.
That's a different thing altogether. So we're talking about this, and this.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd be just as, I don't know, I want to hear you guys say, I'd be just inclined to leave it natural metal rather than painted.
Are you on one of the slides that you want me to
use? I'm on
one of the slides. Page 39.
Yeah, I'm with Bob.
There's stainless.
Well, yeah, it's stainless. You know, caveat I'd like to have is to make sure that
it's a natural metal.
That Jane's okay with
it. They look okay. I think they look okay.
I think she might be.
They're neutral.
She has.
No, there's metal color.
It's a little less surface area than I wanted, and I had a visual.
Here's the, just what you're looking at, if you want, if somebody wants to use a pointer and explain what we're talking about. Is this, you said page 39?
Yeah, you can't see it.
You can't see it.
That's not it, it's one that's on either side of that. There you go.
Yeah.
That's the one.
You had it.
You had it.
There, right here, there's one that's down low. That's the one that you can see the popper that's, and then there's two up higher.
Nobody's gonna see the one down low, Jack.
That's right, yeah, you don't see it. It'll hold up better than any other configuration is, it is, and that's frankly why we selected it.
Anybody have any thoughts about natural metal versus painted metal?
I actually think I'd rather see it painted in that place, because when it gets tagged, it's a lot easier to paint over paint.
Lots of thought, too.
Bare metal. I mean, I'd rather see it painted powder coated.
Oh, I didn't think of that, about the tagging.
Yeah, it's just so much easier to fix paint, especially at grade level.
Well, then I would suggest that we, I appreciate that, but I'd suggest that we go ahead and paint it, but apply the same maintenance requirement that we had on the spandrel glass.
Definitely.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, you would.
Okay.
Okay. That's done.
You don't need a motion. Is that clarification enough, Jim, of that first condition? So everything's gonna be powder coated except for the louvers that can't be removed. Those will be painted and subject to the same maintenance requirements.
And upkeep requirement that the spandrel glass has.
Well, we can make it a motion, then.
Well, do we wanna go through them all?
Yeah.
Do it all at once?
Yeah.
I think it's better if you state what you mean, and everybody heard it, and we have it recorded.
I do too, yeah. Right.
All right, so.
Form a motion?
Yeah, I would prefer just a clean motion.
No slippage.
Take a shot at it. Then I would move that this painting in lieu of powder coating for only these grills that cannot be removed from the building be approved with the same maintenance upkeep oversight provisions that were previously assigned to the spandrel glass on the west side of the building.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Approved, unanimous. Next item, future agenda items. I think we pretty much resolved everything.
There'll be other items coming before you, but they're going to be on different agendas. You don't have to, necessarily if you wanted something on the agenda.
I have a question, Jim. How do we schedule with Jim and Bob for?
Take care of it. We'll do it through Jim.
Okay.
Any further comments from the audience? All right.
Let me just say I appreciate your input.
Thanks, and I know it wasn't the right time.
Okay.
I don't know when is a good time.
I appreciate your input on these issues that face your problem.
Thank you for.
Okay. And you're welcome to show up to this other meeting.
I'll try to talk to Belinda to see if I can get on the timing list.
All right. Thank you. I think we're done.
Thanks.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you.